This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Brave Rangers in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. And we're excited about today's conversation with a community leader in Arkansas who's helping work towards solutions. Glenn, who will we be talking with today?
Well, we're really happy to have on our podcast today Dr. Lisa McNear. Lisa is a recently retired psychologist, and she is our current Braver Angels Arkansas Alliance co-chair. So, Lisa, welcome to On the Other Hand.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
We're happy to have you here. So, let's start off, since several people may not know anything about you. Start by telling us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and how did you get to this point in life?
As you said, I'm a retired clinical psychologist. I've worked over 30-something years in the state of Arkansas. But before that, I grew up in Northwest Florida, sandy beaches and all. It was great. But I moved in. I'm one of six kids. I moved to Arkansas actually in college and never looked back. I just adopted it as my home forever. And just kind of love being here. So I worked for a while as a school teacher before going back to graduate school. And I love that experience as well. But in addition to working as a clinical psychologist in different settings, private practice, academia, and other clinical settings, I've done a lot of volunteer work throughout my adulthood, working on boards, volunteering at church, volunteering in public schools, just trying to stay active in my community. That's always been really important to me. And right now, let's see, I have two stepchildren. I have one daughter and several older grandchildren are getting ready to become a grandmother once again. So,
congratulations. So you mentioned doing a lot of volunteer work, and we know you work with Braver Angels. Now, anything else that's keeping you busy these days?
I've started traveling again a bit, which has always been really exciting and fun for me. I love going to different parts of our country, but also to other countries just to experience that. I always feel like I come back with a new perspective about different ways to live and different settings to live in and different, perspective, I think. So that's always been really important. Me staying involved with my family, my church. I spend some days just reading, which is one of the great luxuries in life that retirement brings. So I like to cook. I'm big on having family over and cooking big meals and stuff like that, which is probably a throwback to my six children, big family experiences early on. So that seems to be about it.
So one of the things you've recently taken on is to begin being more involved in Braver Angels here in Arkansas. So could you tell us a bit about what you're doing now and what drew you to doing that kind of work?
I'm still pretty new as a moderator, trained as a moderator, but what got me involved in it was really, as you know, you told me about Braver Angels. It wasn't new to me to be interested in understanding the political landscape of my state and my community and my country. I've always been very interested in how government and in a such as ours helps our communities and helps bring people up and felt like it was a responsibility to stay engaged in different ways. I've worked on a couple of political campaigns, but usually more in the background, fundraising, things like that. You and I have had some discussions about the work that you were doing and as I started thinking about retirement and what I wanted to do with extra time. we had another, we had more conversations about it. And so you certainly brought that to me. I was a little nervous about how to get involved and what it involved. And the more I watched different workshops conducted online and saw the level of training involved and the focus of Braver Angels and the fact that it was about engaging people and teaching people how to have civil conversations about really difficult topics, it really hit home for me. I mean, I think that it's a natural extension of work I did as a clinician, but it is different. And the difference in the training for being a moderator with Braver Angels, I think sometimes it gets tangled up with my identity as a clinician, because it is very different in terms of you're not there to work on people or to push people in a certain direction. It really is about listening and having people feel comfortable and safe about being curious about people who are different than have different perspectives. And so I love how tight the training is and how careful you that the way the workshops are structured. I'm still learning about that. And that was a little bit of a surprise that it is does pose some challenges for me. But in the end, I think what struck me as so powerful is that by the very design of the Braver Angel workshops, I think people start to learn about empathy or increase their level of empathy. And to me, that's incredibly powerful and very important, particularly given the political landscape that we're facing right now.
Yeah, and I would just add that you've done a really nice job so far. You say you're still learning. I guess we all are to some extent, but I've already heard a couple of rave reviews about the job you've done as a moderator. So your skill set that you had as a psychologist doing things like presentation, I'm sure has come forth and helped you, just like it helped me, and just like April's, you know, training has helped her, I'm sure.
Thanks for that. But yeah, I see lots of room for improvement, but that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
You know, one of the things that happens as we've been interviewing people is we really see their personal and professional lives impacting the way that they communicate. And they bring those things into their conversations with us. And, you know, as you've had, I know with your clinician work, but also your volunteer work, you've had the chance to work with people who differ from you politically and in other ways over the years. And I am curious, what have you learned that has helped you effectively communicate and work with others who differ from you in some respect?
Well, you're right. I think that's such a good observation you made about how we bring our work into what we're doing. And sometimes it's in surprising ways. I would say I couldn't have been a clinician, or I don't think you can be an effective clinician unless it's pretty early. I mean, early on, one of the initial skills you have to learn is or manage is how we react to other people. And if you can't, as a clinician, if I'm not able to accept people who have differing perspectives than I do, and try to understand them and respect them and value them, you don't get very far in that kind of work. So I think that helped initially, but I think when it comes to politics and having those kind of non-clinical, take off my professional hat in that area. And when it's friends or other people, people I work with, or, you know, people I socialize with, we bump into each other's politics sometimes and disagreements about how problems should be addressed and how we see the world. And I think drawing some on my clinical training, but also I think I've always been kind of like this. It's just trying to understand people, why, how, what shaped their worldview, why they care about something so passionately and other things don't seem to matter, how they see solutions to difficulties, challenges in their lives, and what they're trying to accomplish. I think that's always intrigued me. And I think it helps now. I think it helps me kind of step back and really, my goal being to understand someone. Do I get my own emotional reaction sometimes? Of course. But I think what's important there, again, is learning to accept my own responses to people when my feelings get hurt or I feel like, you know, my own passions rising, that what's most helpful is to just note it as a different data, and that not let that run or rule how I respond to other people, and to be continue to stay curious and try to understand their perspective. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it, but I can respect that someone thinks differently than me.
Do you have an example of when you've done that, perhaps, that you could share?
I'm going to share a real personal one instead of a clinical one, because that always feels a little tricky to me. When I was fresh out of college, I participated in an equal rights amendment rally, and I felt very strongly about it. And so as I told you, I have a large family, and one of my siblings reported to me that when my dad heard that I was doing that, his comment was I had gone off the deep end. What really hurt my feelings. And so I kind of stewed with that a little bit. And, you know, I really wanted my father's respect, and it felt pretty disrespectful and hurtful. But I went to him instead of just reacting and getting mad and stomping around, or, you know, and said, I heard that you said this, and it really hurt my feelings, but I really want to understand what you mean by that. And it was one of the most important conversations as an adult that I ever had with my father. And what happened was, he, first of all, he was surprised that his comment would have that much of an impact on me or any of his children. So that was a big surprise for me. And it made my father seem more like another a human being than just a father, you know, just this character in my life. He became more a human to me than just a role in my life. And or position. And what followed was, he started talking a little bit about these rallies and how they kind of upset him, and it seemed like there was a lot of anger and he didn't get it. And what I came to understand is that he was worried about change. He was worried about roles changing. He was worried about what all this anger meant and feeling personally attacked sometimes as a male. But it was the threat to him, and some of it he hadn't really named before. And that led into a discussion about why I also cared about fairness and justice, which are certainly issues he could get behind, and what he really wanted for his daughters. And when it got more personal like that, you know, what kind of experiences he wanted us to have in the world and how he wanted us to be treated, daughters and granddaughters, it just moved the conversation to a whole different level. And later we had discussions about other issues, but that was a pretty big moment in my life. And it really shifted things for us.
You both could have just stomped off and just assumed what the other person meant, and not, you know, tried to lean into that potentially difficult conversation. And I think that's what we oftentimes do with people across the political aisle, is we hear them say something and we then just make all these assumptions about what they are as a person, as opposed to, you know, trying to understand where they're coming from. I'm curious, why... You know, what do you think produces that lack of willingness to maybe ask those hard questions or be curious, and that leads to that friction between people and groups who differ politically?
I think there's multiple things I could name, but I think the biggest one is fear. I mean, I can remember that conversation and really have to kind of, you know, build myself up to go, I'm gonna have this talk. It could go badly. I didn't know what to expect. So I think that that's a just sort of one example, but I think it really translates to all those conversations, whether you're going to say something that's going to offend a friend or a colleague or someone that has your boss or someone that has some power in your life. By speaking up for how you feel and you're sharing, you're being vulnerable about how something has affected you, and you're, and I'm, and it's also some fear, I think, that someone's going to treat your own feelings and your own perspectives with disrespect. And there is that risk. There is always that risk. So I think as humans, we want to protect our sense of personal integrity. And anytime it feels threatened, and fear gets fired up or stoked, we go into this defensive position, and pull away from people rather than leaning in. It's a great term that you used.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, the fear issue sure comes up a lot. I mean, you and I've talked, and we've talked with a lot of our guests about the role of emotions in our political differences. I forget exactly how you described it, but there was something you said. Oh, you said, talking about people's differences and things like that, that bothers you, try to treat them as data, which the way I view that is, that is a more higher level cognitive function. You're kind of using your brain on an intellectual level to rise above the emotional, instinctive kind of things that we often easily revert to by default. So when we're at that lower level emotional thing, we're not always thinking at our best. And so if you can maintain a kind of a rational, fact-based, intellectual approach to it, then it helps you be a little more in charge of things and not let emotion take over. So I really appreciate that about, you know, what you said. So you may be aware, if you've heard any of our other podcasts, that one of the typical things we do is we ask our guests to describe their political leanings in terms of color. As you know, in Braver Angels, we use the traditions of blue to denote someone who is maybe left-leaning, generally democratic, liberal, whereas red would be more the conservative, you know, Republican type way of looking at things. But recognizing that no one's the same. We all have variations in complicated ways that we look at the world. So there are lots of shades between red and blue. Where would you place yourself on that political color spectrum?
Well, actually, I want to steal Chris Jones's when he said black. You know, that's all the colors. Thought that was such a fabulous response. Certainly, I identify, I would say, a progressive. And for me, that the ideology of the Democratic Party is usually, and I'll say usually, more in line with some of my value, with a lot of my values. But that's how I more typically vote. But I can say that there have been exceptions of how I've voted in the past. And I'm hesitant to even say blue, because I think it's more how other people would identify me, but certainly more on the what other people would describe as liberal or progressive. And I embrace that. I embrace the idea of being progressive and whatever moves us forward as a community, whether it's local or state or national or world. You know, I want things that raise us up, and that means taking care of each other sometimes and looking out for each other and sharing our resources and working together a lot. And so a lot of those are reflected, I think, in progressive movements, but not limited to. Certainly not limited to.
Okay. Yeah, that's twice that you've mentioned that phrase, raising people up. I like that. That's an interesting way of looking at that. We could get into a whole other direction there, but maybe later. Because what I want to do now is kind of sticking with the idea of your general political philosophy. What are the things that led you there? What kind of life experiences led you there? What kind of values do you have that seem to you to be consistent with that generally progressive philosophy?
You know, I grew up in my early years was in a really small community, and we were the only Catholic family in town that we knew of. We had to go to another town nearby to go to church. So early on, I had kind of an experience of being an outsider, a bit of an outsider in a really strong little religious community, actually. So, and I don't mean that in all ways. I'm just saying there was a touch of that feeling, you know, that experience of differences. And I think that those are kind of the seeds of trying to understand, part of the seeds of trying to understand what makes people different, what makes people afraid of each other. The progressive other issues are fairness to me, fairness and respect for people who are different. And I think that a lot of movements that have been fueled by progressives have been moving people forward and bringing people together. And I'll give some examples. It's for instance, equal rights for women or civil rights, in general, around race and ethnic identity, just that those movements that were pushing for change that I felt strongly needed to happen were often pushed by people identified as liberal. So I think that those were the seeds for me of really saying that that's the group I want to align with. And looking values of how do we share our resources? How do we look out for each other? How do we challenge the status quo? Just because it's always been done a certain way, does it mean that we should stay that way? Should we, are there ways to look for greater fairness, better use of our resources, better community? So I'm not sure if I answered your question exactly, but it's hard to pinpoint where things started and why they evolved and why those values seem to be more reflected for me in a progressive ideology.
I think a lot of people find that question a little bit difficult at first because that's the nature. A lot of times, the research suggests a lot of people adopt their political philosophy on largely not well thought out basis, more instinctual, tribal, emotional kind of basis. So having the chance to reflect on what experiences and what values led you to where you are politically, that's an important investigation for people to take upon themselves, I believe.
I think part of the hesitancy on my part, though, is by saying the values I see in the Democratic Party or Progressive Party movements doesn't mean I always agree with every initiative. And it also, I don't want it to imply that I think other parties don't share some of those exact same values or a lot of, I think it's more the way those values get expressed and get carried out that are reflective in different parties. So I think, yeah, some of my hesitancy is like, it doesn't mean I chose that because the other is not any of that. Does that make sense?
It does, and it kind of goes along well with something I was going to get to. When we talk about the parties, the two major parties, the Democrats and Republicans, we've always had clear distinctions and disagreements historically, but these days it seems to be the level of disagreement is really strengthened, even in areas where there was bipartisan agreement in the past. One thing that I'm familiar with, we give it as an example, would be environmental concerns. So there are a lot of things that seem to have taken the two parties in opposite directions in almost every major consideration. Some people argue that that's because our societal disagreements are getting more driven by tribal or identity or cultural disputes. And that at that point, our values and the facts about what's real on the ground become less and less important in deciding what side you're going to take. That's kind of a big issue, and it's a tough problem, but it's not going to keep me from asking you what you would do to resolve it. What do you think?
I think a lot of the tribalism is a ploy. I mean, we're the human tribe, right? But I think the divisiveness and the fear mongering that kind of gets, stoking the fires of differences and threat and fear. I think that it's a really kind of a cheap tool used by some of our leaders, and it rallies people to support your mission, but it's really about power more than about an ideology. A lot of times it gets named ideology, but sometimes there's just, it's not really grounded in facts, what some of the positions are that people are claiming or the fears that people think are going to happen. One of my concerns is that as a voting population, sometimes we give up our power. One of the things that concerns me most is I hear, and I have felt it myself at times, it's like, why even bother? Nothing changes. You know, people in power are going to keep their power and they're going to keep doing what they do. And I think that defeatist stance is not very helpful, even if I feel it sometimes. I think hanging in there, I think joining organizations that work with community and about communication. I think I'm a big believer in education in general. And I think some of what we have to remind our citizens of is that we all have power and to be using it responsibly, that we don't just get to abandon our responsibilities as citizens because we're exhausted or we think we're helpless and we have no power. So I think being reminded of that, and community groups can do that, sometimes build that sense of power and efficacy. I would love to see skills in terms of communication skills around differences, being able to talk about differences, different perspectives, really being taught at really every level of education. I think that's part of preparing our children to become citizens. But in terms of now, I think conversations about policies need to become more transparent. I think that the tribalism is pushed at higher levels of leadership because it keeps parties in power versus ideas in power. So I think some changes in the way our government functions, again, more transparency about how decisions are being made, and I think different voices to the table. I think once we take a position of we're in charge, whatever party it is, and so you don't get to have much of a voice anymore because you're the other party, is a huge mistake. So inclusiveness and letting different voices come in local, state, or national policies are being discussed and strategies are being explored. I think we should never just limit it to the parties in power. And I think the citizens, we should be demanding that, and we should be demanding other changes that I think processes that have been crippling. I think the way we run our elections and the kind of money that gets spent and what it takes to get elected is a huge part of our problem. It really cuts out a lot of able people that might be great leaders. It becomes so difficult and challenging that's not what rises to the top. So I think we need to have some campaign spending reformed is part of it. The transparency I talked about. And I think if we can clear some of that static and that divisiveness or misinformation, social media is another, can't even address that, but you know, that's a beast that has allowed people to give voice to misinformation. And I mean, this is from all sides and we don't really know how to manage it because there is that anonymity there that, you know, once people become dehumanized, we're not looking each other in the eye and having these conversations, it's so easy to become, you know, just kind of reify those camps, those boundaries around this is my camp and these are my people and this is who I feel safe with. So breaking that down, and however we can do that, breaking down those walls of communicate so that we communicate and really listen to each other. And I think it's going to have to take several forms at different levels, from, like I said, campaign reform to transparency and discussions and inclusiveness in discussions that we have around issues that affect all of us.
Well, we've run out of time for this episode in our interview with Lisa McNear, the Blue Co-Chair of the Arkansas Alliance of Braver Angels, but we have a few more things to talk about, so stay tuned.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of On the Other Hand. With the first part of our conversation with Lisa McNear, be sure to check out the second part of this conversation with Lisa, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. You can find us on the podcast page of the Braver Angels website, Braver Angels Arkansas website, at arkansas.braverangels.org, or on many popular podcast sites.
When you visit our website, you can help us improve our program by responding to a brief survey using the link on our podcast webpage. You can also email us for program or speaker ideas or other feedback at otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White,
and April Chatham Carpenter,
let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.